Chapter 17. Beginning of the Flood. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the water. Revelation of John, 1877. Mary's dream of the previous December had given her guidance, and she had been quick to follow. Obedience to God made her footsteps sure and strong. She stressed the great importance of obedience when she said to her students, quote, God is the fountain of light, and he illumines one's way when one is obedient. Be sure that God directs your way. Then hasten to follow under every circumstance. End quote. Was there not another lesson in Mary's dream? From childhood, she had had the ability to see thoughts, motives, and purpose in those around her. Now she was feeling something deeper, which appeared in her dream as dark, swinish forms. The conscious thought of her loyal students had been good, and the appearance was promising. But something underneath was destroying this promise. Something swinish was uprooting the field she had sown and so carefully tended. This swinish element in human nature would exact a heavy toll before she learned what it was, how it operated, and how to meet it. But when God bade her to rebuke students, she understood that it was to stir the latent tendencies in the heart in order to bring them to the surface for destruction. And do you not think that she recalled this dream when she wrote for a later edition of Science and Health? Quote, in the soil of an honest and good heart, the seed must be sown, else it beareth not much fruit, for the swinish element in human nature uproots it. End quote. In the first edition of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy had written, to make a specialty of healing is really impossible for us when our time, means, and health are required for the fuller investigation of this subject. To teach, write, establish practices for students, or halt, perhaps, at measures to be adopted because of persecution. The demands on Mary's time were so great that she had the hope that Dr. Eddy might take over the teaching. To this end, she called upon her old friend from Albion, Sarah Crosby, who was now a successful court reporter, to take complete stenographic notes of the course she taught to a small class in February. Sometime earlier, Mrs. Crosby had written for her friend's aid because of an injury to her eye, and Sarah's testimony of the healing, which had been immediate, appeared in Science and Health. Mary charged Sarah nothing for the healing, but her friend did not reciprocate with her services. She had written before coming that she feared Mary would feel she had grown worldly and sordid, and Mary was astounded at the love of money and lack of interest in the metaphysical teaching which she had encountered. It proved to be a most unsatisfactory arrangement for both of them. Sarah was unhappy with her pay, and Mary found the 1,200 transcribed pages worse than useless. Of this she wrote, a shorthand writer made more than 1,200 pages out of our instructions of 12 lessons, but rendered those pages wholly unfit for use by a misapplication of our terms and omitting our full explanations, whereby a material or physical statement is given a metaphysical explanation when describing disease and the method of its cure. This problem with Sarah was minor compared with the uprooting of her work that the swinish element was doing. Richard Kennedy knew that his teacher's spirituality made her so sensitive that she had felt the ills of her students and his patients when they were working together. The students were an avenue through which the malicious malpractitioner could attack her health and remain hidden. And lo, of a sudden she experienced such severe pain through the thoughts of her new students that she could scarcely carry on her work. But that was not all of the water mental activity out of the serpent's mouth. He was not through with George Berry. In March, that young man sued Mrs. Eddy for $2,700 and attached her house. His bill of particulars demanded pay for everything he had done for her for the past 5 years, even listing accompanying her on a walk. Attorneys were hired, a trial date set for September, and Mrs. Eddy fled from the persecution in Lynn. She left no forwarding address, but she wrote Daniel Spofford just before leaving with her husband. "Dear student, this hour of my departure, I pick up from the carpet a piece of paper, write you a line to say I am at length driven into the wilderness. Everything needs me in science. My doors are thronged. The book lies waiting. But those who call on me mentally, in suffering, are in belief killing me. Stopping my work that none but me can do in their supreme selfishness, how unlike the example I have left them. Tell this to Miss Brown, Mr. McLaughlin, Mrs. Atkinson, and Miss Norman, but do not let them know they can call on me. Thus, if they are doing this ignorantly, and if they do it consciously, tell McLaughlin and them all it would be no greater crime for them to come directly and thrust a dagger into my heart. They are just as surely in belief, killing me and committing murder. The sin lies at their door, and for them to meet its penalty sometime. You can teach them better. See you do this. Oh, Harry, the book must stop. I can do no more now, if ever. They lay on me suffering inconceivable. Mary." If the students will continue to think of me and call on me, I shall at last defend myself, and this will be to cut them off from me utterly in a spiritual sense, by a bridge they cannot pass over, and the effect of this on them they will then learn. I will let you hear from me as soon as I can bear this on account of my health, and will return to prosecute my work on the book as soon as I can safely. I am going far away and shall remain until you will do your part and give me some better prospects. Ever truly, Mary." It was imperative that Daniel Spofford give her better prospects. Their contract of the previous April had required that he pay her a royalty of 10% of the net list price of the book, said royalty payable semi-annually, and that he render her a monthly statement of sales. Nearly a year had elapsed, and these terms had not been fulfilled, although he had spent $500 of the receipts for advertising purposes. Spofford had acknowledged that he had been remiss and had written, "I know you would do nothing which you did not conscientiously think right, and pertaining to the greatest good of the greatest number, even if necessary to the sacrifice of your own self-interest. I have not done right by you in not reporting, according to agreement, the sales of your book. Truth may again be buried beneath the accumulating dust of centuries by the stopping of your labors. I want the book sold, and would gladly have anyone you might sanction take the same off my hands, if you think best, as it undoubtedly is. He wanted to make amends and continue in his position, so Mrs. Eddy made no change. But his sincerity and fidelity were soon to be tested. The trials his teacher was enduring, however, were far greater. The attacks on her health continued and almost overwhelmed her. A few years later, she learned the cause and recorded of Kennedy's work, quote, "This malpractitioner tried his best to break down our health before we learned the cause of our sufferings," end quote. But in the spring of 1877, she had not learned this, and she appealed to Harry Spofford for help on the 7th of April. "I sometimes think I cannot hold on till the next edition is out. Will you not help me so far as is in your power in this way? Take Miss Norman. She is an interesting girl, and help her through. She will work for the cause, but she will swamp me if you do not take hold. I am at present such a tired swimmer. Unless you do this, I have more than I can carry at present. Direct your thoughts and everybody's else that you can away from me. Don't talk of me." 12 days later, Mrs. Eddy was able to write a very lengthy business letter to Spofford, who had promised, among other things, to mark all the errors in 2 copies of the first edition of Science and Health. April 19th, 1877. "My dear student, I will consider the arrangement for embellishing the book. I had fixed on the picture of Jesus and a sick man, the hand of the former outstretched to him as in rebuke of the disease, or waves and an ark. The last will cost less, I conclude, and do as well. No rainbow can be made to look right, except in colors, and that cannot be conveniently arranged in gilt. Now for the printing. Would 480 pages include the key to scriptures and the entire work as it now is? The book entitled Science and Health is to embrace the chapter on physiology all the same as if that chapter was not compiled in a separate volume. Perhaps you so understand it. If the cost is what you stated, I advise you to accept the terms, for I am confident in the sale of 2 editions more. There can be a net income over and above it all. If I get my health again, I can make a large demand for the book, for I shall lecture, and this will sell 1 edition of 1,000 copies, if I can stand it. I am better, some. One circumstance I will name. The night before I left, and before I wrote you those fragments, Miss Brown went into convulsions from a chemical, was not expected to live, but came out of it, saying she felt perfectly well, and as well as before the injury supposed to have been received. I thought at that time, if she was not born again, the mother would die in her labors. Oh, how little my students can know what it all costs me. Now I thank you for relieving me a little in the other case. Please see her 2x a week. In healing, you are benefiting yourself. In teaching, you are benefiting others. I would not advise you to change business at present, The rolling stone gathers no moss. Persevere in one line, and you can do much more than to continually scatter your fire. Try to get students into the field as practitioners, and thus healing will sell the book, and introduce the science more than aught but my lecturing can do. Send the name of any you can get to study for the purpose of practicing, and in 6 months or thereabouts, we will have them in the field helping you. If you have ears to hear, you will understand. Send all letters to Boston. T.O. Gilbert will forward them to me at present. Now for the writings you named. I will make an agreement with you to publish the book the 3 years from the time you took it and have 25% royalty paid me. At the end of this period, we will make other arrangements or agreements or continue those we have made just as the Spirit shall direct me. I feel this is the best thing for the present to decide upon. During these years, we shall have a treasurer, such as we shall agree upon, and the funds deposited in his or her hands, and drawn for specified purposes, at the end of these 3 years. If we dissolve partnership, the surplus amount shall be equally divided between us. And this is the best I can do. All the years I have expended on that book, the labors I am still performing, and all I have done for students and the cause gratuitously, entitle me to some income now that I am unable to work. But as it is, I have none, and instead am sued for $2,700. For what? For just this. I have allowed my students to think I have no rights, and they cannot wrong me. May God open their eyes at length. If you conclude not to carry the work forward on the terms named, it will have to go out of addition, as I can do no more for it. And I believe this hour is to try my students, who think they have the cause at heart, and see if it be so. My husband is giving all his time and means to help me up from the depths in which these students plunge me, and this is all he can do at present. Please write soon. As ever, Mary. Send me the 2 books that are corrected, and just as soon as you can, and I with Gilbert will read them. Please tell me if you are going to have the chapter on physiology in a book by itself, that I may get the preface ready as soon as I am able. I do nothing else when I have a day I can work. We'll send you the final corrections soon. Think of me when you feel strong and well only, and think only of me as well. Ever yours in truth, Mary. This hour surely was to try her student, who thought he had the cause at heart. But his trial was not simply being willing to pay the author a high royalty. He could have done that easily, for most of his sales were at the retail price, saving him the usual 30% to 40% discount to booksellers. His trial came from the same source that was constantly attacking Mrs. Eddy's health. And these attacks on her health had not lessened. Before the end of April, she wrote Spofford again. April 1877, Sunday. Dear student, I am in Boston today, feeling very, very little better for the 5 weeks that are gone. I cannot finish the key yet. I will be getting myself, and all of a sudden I am seized, as sensibly by some other's belief, as the hand could lay hold of me. My sufferings have made me utterly weaned from this plane. And if my husband was only willing to give me up, I would gladly yield up the ghost of this terrible earth plane and join those nearer my life. Cure Miss Brown, or I shall never finish my book. Truly yours, M. Kennedy's attacks against those close to Mrs. Eddy were unlike his attacks upon her. Instead of endeavoring to implant in their thought suggestions of pain and suffering, he reached out to their thought with suggestions of doubt of their teacher, of her motives, of her spirituality, and of her revelation. Though Richard Kennedy is no longer the perpetrator, the malicious attack on the revelator to this age separates many a promising student from science by separating in his thought the revelator from her revelation, either by doubt, neglect, or lack of true appreciation. The attack on Daniel Spofford was not as subtle as the present-day attacks of malicious mind, and his letter of May 30th indicates that he succumbed completely to the erroneous suggestions. May 30th, 1877. Mrs. Eddy, it is not healing a few sick or teaching a dozen students a year, but the preparing of the ark for the saving of God's people. 19 months since the book was first issued and not corrected yet, and the writing on the wall is, you have proven yourself unworthy to be the standard bearer of Christian Science, and God will remove from you the means for carrying on this work. I consider that I have a perfect right to appoint meetings or place in practice those you have taught. I suggest that you give that book and the copyright unconditionally to someone, anyone, and see if God will not prosper it. You have said, if you only had two to stand by you, you would carry this cause. I propose to carry it alone, expecting no one but God to stand by me. Daniel. Lamentations 4, 6, 7, 8. Mrs. Eddy had thought that she at last had two students to stand by her, and now it was obvious that she had only one, Asa Gilbert Eddy. It was also obvious that Spofford was no longer working with her or for her. It was not so much that their partnership must be terminated as that it had terminated already. Whether his statement that God will remove from you the means for carrying on this work was a suggestion from Kennedy or a product of his own confused thoughts, he did not leave it to God, but endeavored to implement it himself. When Mrs. Eddy requested that he return to her the books on hand, he refused to do so and closed them out at a fraction of their value. When she demanded the money that he received for them, he again refused and paid the entire proceeds of $600 to Barry and Newhall. On the 2nd of July, Spofford wrote Mrs. Eddy his parting letter. Final statement. Boston, July 2nd, 1877. The number of copies of Science and Health on hand, May 1st, 1876, were 765. Disposed of as per reports, 679, leaving 86. Left with you to sell, January 3rd, 1877, 26. left with you to sell February 12, 1877. 12. Left with you to sell February 24th, 1877. 48. Totaling 86. I do not consider that I have had a well-made book to handle. 3 months ago, the interest was such that large quantities of new ones would have found a ready sale, provided the essential corrections had been made. But on your writing me that I could have the new books only by paying you a royalty, beyond all reason and justice, or you would let the book go out of edition, I saw that the motive actuating you in this cause was such that in justice to myself and the principle of Christian Science, no successful business relations could be maintained for any length of time between us. Under the influence of mesmerism, Spofford expected to supersede Mrs. Eddy as the leader of the Christian Science movement. He foolishly expected her to give him the copyright to Science and Health, now that he had removed for her the means for republishing. He even signed an agreement with Barry later in July to pay him $400 more if at any time he should, quote, receive control of the said book, Science and Health, end quote. The time was not distant when Mrs. Eddy would see that Richard Kennedy was fascinated with evil and with motiveless malignity was experimenting with the projection of thought to control other people's minds. But in the fall of 1877, Kennedy, in the utmost secrecy that he had maintained all his lifetime, was smiling at his success as she reacted to the behavior of Daniel Spofford and George Barry. He gloated at George Barry's trial when Spofford testified as a witness for Barry, and both testified against their teacher. And he, quote, remarked in the courtroom with a malignant sneer to a Christian Scientist, "Now what do you think of your Mr. Barry?" End quote. Kennedy's work was the exact opposite of his teacher's, and so was his life. All that he did was hidden and covered up, while all she did was in the open for everyone to see. All her years were a sacrifice to the world for the benefit and progress of mankind. But temporarily her work came to a stop, for once more it was necessary, as she had written, to, quote, halt at measures to be adopted because of persecution, end quote. She taught no more classes in 1877 and stopped temporarily on her revision of Science and Health, but she was ever encouraging newcomers to enter the ranks, to study, and to practice. One such newcomer was Clara Choate, a young wife and mother who had been healed by Dorcas Rawson. Mrs. Choate has left a word picture of the leader at that time. One of my most precious memories of Mrs. Eddy is an interview I had with her in 1877. I had been wonderfully healed. She emphasized this work of Christian healing as laying the foundation for Science and Health, as we then termed the cause, more often than its present name, of Christian Science. She said, quote, "To be a good healer or a true follower of Christ, you must demonstrate the law of God, for His law does overcome disease. In overcoming this, you overcome sin." End quote. I replied, "Why, this will be glorious." And she remarked in her sweet, winsome, and persuasive manner, quote, "Your enthusiasm is just what I need to carry forward this work of healing to the hearts of the people. For healing is what they desire, and what you and I and dear Gilbert and others of my students must give them. I must turn my attention from now on to other departments of the work, which I am trying to systematize. We must have system." End quote. The healing was the need of the hour. She strongly urged just the faithful, patient healing work by a life devoted and willing. As she sat so unconsciously, stately in her modest rocking chair, with eloquent upturned face, beaming with the glorious hopes of a soul inspired, I felt she was pleading for the sick world, the whole sick world. I resolved to join the class, as she proposed, and remember the joy of my decision, and the quote, "God bless you, my dear girl," end quote, which she so tenderly and impressively uttered as she accompanied me to the door. All the way home, I marveled at her faith in God, at her divine leading, and still feel to this day Mrs. Eddy really walked and talked with God.